Translation: beyond this gross conception of form is another subtle conception of form, which is without formal shape, and is unseen, unheard, and unmanifest. The living being has his form beyond this subtlety, otherwise he could not have repeated births and repeated births. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As the great cosmic manifestation is conceived as the gigantic body of the Lord, so also there is the conception of his subtle form, which is simply realized without being seen, heard, or manifested. But in fact, all these gross or subtle conceptions of the body are in relation with the living beings. The living being has his spiritual form beyond this gross material or subtle psychic existence. The gross body and psychic functions cease to act as soon as a living being leaves the visible gross body. In fact, we say that the living being has gone away because he is unseen and unheard. Even when the gross body is not acting, when the living being is in sound sleep, we know that he is within the body by his breathing. So the living being's passing away from the body does not mean that this that there is no existence of the living soul. It is there, otherwise how can he repeat his births again and again? The conclusion is that the Lord is eternally existent in his transcendental form, which is neither gross nor subtle. Like that of the living being, his body is never to be compared to the gross and subtle bodies of the living being. All such conceptions of God's body are imaginary. The living being has his eternal spiritual form, which is conditioned only by his material contamination. Omiganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastacha Deshatayane. So this is a mixture of speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead's spiritual nature and the living entity's similar nature. And a few verses ago it started speaking about Ete Chamsha Kalapumsa, Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. This is called the Emperor verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's establishing that every other form of Godhead, every other Vishnu Tattva, is actually subservient to this original form of Godhead, Krishna. And Jiva Goswami goes into a lot of detail about how he, by the different words used in that verse, it establishes beyond a shadow of a doubt that, Krishna cannot be anything else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that may take a lot of time to realize that, and a lot of effort. And so, the Vedic scriptures give us, whatever our particular situation in this world, especially in the human form, if we have a human form, then we can take some guidance from some type of scripture and gradually come to understand the Supreme Lord. And therefore, in this particular verse, it talks about the, as well as the Vishnu Tattva, there is the Virat Rupa. So in Bhagavad Gita, it mentions after the four people who initially try to surrender to Krishna, there are three others who are less advanced. And one is the one who sees himself as the supreme. This is the lowest. One who is diverse in many. This is the demigods. He sees the demigods as being supreme. And at last, this is the best one, is that he sees that, the Supreme Lord is the universe, the universal organism. So it's a matter of purifying our vision. There's one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What's it? Anyway, it uses the word Shrutekshita. Yad Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Ritsaroja. I say Shrutekshita. It said that we can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by hearing. By hearing about God, we can see God, we can understand God. Because seeing means understanding. When people understand, they say, I see. So this is the process. And it says that by that process alone, we can understand Krishna fully. He says that, you know, Krishna is so amicable to his devotee that he voluntarily takes a form just suitable for that devotee. And I remember once, I'll say it, I weren't going to say it, it's a little bit embarrassing, but I was once, when I was in Manchester, just before I went out on a Sangatan, the temple president, Krishna Dharma actually, he came up and he says, just out of the blue, he says, what deity do you worship? And we'd only got Panchatattva on the altar, you know. And I got a book in my hand, and I said, this one. And it was on the way to Krishna. And actually, I did like that book. I kept looking. Wow. Anyway, I didn't think anymore. I thought that's a strange question to come out of the blue like that. And then maybe nearly 20 years later, I was sat there where Vishwamba was sat. And Shyamasundar's wife, Malati, were giving class. And she was here in the early days at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And she was talking about the deity installation and how they used to worship, and she was talking about how she used to take photographs of Radha Gohulananda. Then she said, and one day I got the On the Way to Krishna book. Oh no, she said, actually, I took a particular photo of Krishna, and then later, that became the picture on the front of the cover of On the Way to Krishna. So Krishna's taking care, he's making sure that we've got some worship, some deity and everything. We don't have to over endeavour in that way. I didn't know anything about it, but there it is, Krishna was on the boat, Radha Gohulananda. So it says this is how the Lord appears to a devotee who's trying to worship him. He'll naturally actually show himself in due course of time. But that may take time. And it's explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam just how Krishna does that. What's the process of understanding Krishna is hearing. So Parikshit Maharaj, he says to Sukadeva Goswami in the second canto, 8th chapter, he starts to talk about, he's beckoning Sukadeva Goswami, says, carry on speaking. By this speaking, I'll become completely perfect. And then there's another three verses after that. he says, just by hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seriously, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is established on the heart of the pure devotee. And then the next verse says that the sound incarnation of the Lord comes in through the ear and then goes into the heart and purifies that pure devotee. So we might think, what about me? I'm a lad anyway. And then it says that it's like autumn rains. Now autumn rains, I heard Satchinandan Swami mentioning what they call autumn rains in India. It says that when there's a rainy season, all the refuge and all the dirty things get put in a particular place. And then when the rains come, autumn's actually early in that part of it. It's like June and August, July and August. This is their autumn. And it says that then the autumn rains, they clear all these filthy places. It's also another way is that, you know, when you have heavy rains, when you have the monsoon, which is like June, July, especially June, July, and then it gets a little bit softer later on. It says that all the water becomes turbulent and muddy. And that's actually the time of the year when, you know, the disease is prominent in India. You have to be careful about what water you drink, because all the germs are floating there. It says, but then as the monsoon starts to ebb away, there's just light rains. And it says these light rains are not sufficient to turbulate, you know, to make the water muddy, but they cleanse the muddy water. And so this is the effect of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's clearing the heart. And so by this purification of heart, then our natural constitutional position becomes manifested. So, you know, devotional service is actually a process of hearing, that's all. If we just hear regularly, then we'll become purified. You know, what was it? Ramananda Roy was asked by Lord Chaitanya to explain something important about devotional service and quote, you know, some verses to actually back up what he was saying. And so he went through a series of verses starting with Varnashram, Dham, surrender everything to Krishna, Sarvadharma, Parityaya, and then, you know, Lord Chaitanya was saying, this is okay, but it's actually external. And then he went to Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. This is when the heart becomes cleansed of material vision. And, you know, Lord Chaitanya still said, no, we still may not understand Krishna, or we may not understand him properly. And then Ramananda Roy then said that, okay, there's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam, Jnane Priyasa Mudapashinamanti Eva. Jivanti san makaritam baradiya vatma. Stane stitasya shruti katim tanuvan manobir e jayato e trayato jijapijas apitrais trilokyam. So it says we don't have to over-endeavour to become Krishna conscious. We don't have to go anywhere. We can just stay in our social position. And if we just hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from realize sources, then that's enough. He says that actually we capture Krishna. Krishna's captured by the devotee who tries to hear about him. It's a natural, isn't it? It's a natural psychology. If somebody wants to hear about us, we'll think, oh, and we'll want to actually reciprocate with that person. So, you know, not that Krishna's in the same mentality that we are. He doesn't need to think like that. You know, we are doing it for sense gratification, but Krishna's doing it as, because this is his natural psychology, to reciprocate with a living entity. And it says that nobody's able to conquer Krishna except that devotee. So anyway, this is talking about trying to understand Krishna by the process of hearing about him. So that's part of this verse. But it's also relating to, you know, the individual soul, how the individual soul is also very difficult to understand, because we have the same nature as Krishna. And so there's different ways of understanding our real identity. Because we cannot prove the existence of the soul, except, you know, conclusively, except if we accept, unless we accept the Vedas. It's if we accept the Vedas, then we can understand what the soul is. This is in Bhagavad Gita. We cannot, beyond the purview of the Vedas, we can get some idea of the soul, that's all. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the different ways we can understand the soul. Is that alright? First one is by considering our situation. I remember I was listening to one class by Prabhupada. Oh no, it wasn't a class. He was speaking to one media man. I forget what he was. He was a radio man or a news man or whatever. But he was speaking to this media man, and he was like quite a friendly person. And so Prabhupada started to preach to him. And he said, listen, he says, and we're talking about the motor car example and the driver. He explained about the motor car and the driver. And he said, which is most important? And there was a silence for a while. He says, the car. And Prabhupada said, no, listen carefully. And so he explained it in a slightly different way. He says, so which is most important? And there was a silence. He said, the car. And then Prabhupada said, no, listen very carefully. Listen very carefully. And so he went through explaining it in a different way, and he said, so which is the essential part of these two? Which is the most important? He said, and he started chuckling. He says, the car. And Prabhupada said, no. He says, give him some prasadam. So it's difficult. We can only start to understand this transcendental nature if we're actually practicing spiritual life. This is why it said we should hear. If we're not hearing, even if we've been practicing and we stop hearing, we'll not understand properly. We have to do. In order to, you know, re-enter into Maya, we have to forget a lot of what we're learning. So that's one process, by considering, or what we call analysis, analyzing what is the body, what is the soul. Another realization is by, I've lost it here actually, let's have a look. Oh, here it is. By practical experience. Has anybody any practical experience that they're not the body? I know one devotee said he used to at night, he used to like to go to bed. Because at night he used to have an out-of-body experience. And he used to float up from his body. And he was pushing himself off the wall, floating about the room. So, not many people get that sort of realization. But I remember once... I've probably told this story before, but I'm going to tell you again, because it's a really good one for this practical experience. I was in, it was 1973 or something like that, and I was in Blackpool. So, you know, at that time, everybody went to Blackpool for the holidays. I went for a week or so, and I stayed in this boarding house. And in this boarding house was this old gentleman. I saw him in the corner. And he looked in his 80s. And I noticed every morning he used to go out before breakfast, and then he used to reappear, you know, a couple of hours later and take breakfast. And I started talking to him one day, and I said, what do you do in the morning? And he said, oh, I go for a walk. I said, where do you walk? He said, I walk right down. This was in the north of Blackpool, the North Pier, but beyond that. He said, I walk right down to the South Pier and back. And it's like a mile both ways, or getting on that way anyway. And I said, wow, you do that to keep fit? He says, because he looks sprightly, actually. He said, well, that's part of it. And then he said, I used to be a sergeant in the First World War. And my particular duty was to, I was a sergeant, I used to have this platoon of soldiers, or little few soldiers who used to, and our particular service was to go behind enemy lines, what they call it? Reconnaissance, is it? Yeah. And they, you know, they had to be very careful, and they were, one particular day they were behind enemy lines, 3 miles behind enemy lines. And guess what? They got spotted. And so what would you do in that situation? So they all did an about turn and just started running as fast as they could. And, you know, so the enemy started following them. And they came to this 5-bar gate. And, you know, most of the soldiers, they cleared it. But this particular... And then this sergeant, he also cleared it. And then he stopped after a few yards. And he looked back, and there was this private, you know, 18-year-old soldier. And he just froze out of fear. And he couldn't move. And he couldn't get over the gate. And so he just thought, he didn't have time to really think, he just ran back and just got all of them and threw him over the gate, and then they carried on running together. But obviously, you know, the enemy had come a little bit closer by that time. And so he noticed out of the corner of his eye one particular soldier threw what he thought was a grenade. And he didn't stop to think, he just carried on running, and then he heard this loud explosion behind him. And he just kept, he was focused. You know what I mean, to be focused. In that situation, there's no Maya. He was just focused on what he wanted to achieve. He had to get back behind his lines, otherwise anything can happen. And so therefore he just carried on running and running and running and running, and eventually and then, you know, consciousness came back into the body. His consciousness was out there. And then he felt his leg was wet, and he looked down and half his calf had been blown away. And he never felt a thing until he actually focused on it. So in the same way, this is just an example how we're not actually really connected with this body. It's by consciousness that we're connected. It's a subtle connection. And the more we put our focus into the body, the more we become absorbed in the body. If the focus is outside the body, then we're not aware of it. So devotional service is that's the second one, the second way we can understand by practical realization. Actually, they took this soldier and they took him into the medical tent, and they said, "Oh, we'll have to amputate your leg." And he said, "You're not amputating that." He said, "I've just run 3 miles with that." He said, "Stitch it back up." And so they did that, and he kept it moving all the time. So the other way is that we're talking about consciousness outside the body. Keep the consciousness outside the body. I mean, even in material terms, to control the general populace, they have to engage the populace. Is that right? If they don't engage people, what happens? You know, the idle mind is a devil's workshop. So it's for the wrong reason, but they have to engage people's minds. And so another way of engaging the mind for devotees is devotional service, isn't it? But real devotional service is not just the activity. I mean, if it'll absorb the mind, you just get absorbed in the activity, then you actually forget the body. But when we really focus, when we're mentally into the service, the process is by constantly doing that, we're constantly on the spiritual platform. And we're only able to do that if we're following the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti nicely. It creates a situation where we can focus. And that is like an artificial... No, it's not artificial, it's Krishna's mercy. We are focusing on... we're actually engaged in devotional service. And that's the only way to stay on that platform. By engagement, it's called therapy. It's the same activity, but it's for a different reason. When somebody breaks a leg, what happens? They put a pot on, it's immobile for 2 months, they take it off and then they start therapy. They start using it for the very reason that broke it. So by practicing devotional service, we obtain the very thing we lost. So this is the third reason. And I wanted to say something about that, actually. One thing here is that focus, we're not the body, right? We're not the body, but we have to look after the body. Like a bit of a dichotomy. We're not the body, but we have to focus on the body. We have to look after the body. I was thinking about this, that... Srila Prabhupada, for instance, everybody realizes that Prabhupada was an exceptional soul. He seemed to be, absorbed in spiritual life. Whatever he said, it was about the difference between matter and spirit. When he spoke to the devotees on the morning walk, everything he saw, he related it to Krishna consciousness. He was once on a drive in America with the devotees. They were taking him by a car, and he passed one signpost. And Prabhupada looked, and he said, is that right? Chintamani? And they looked and said, "Oh no, that's Cincinnati, Prabhupada." So, you know, we can see that what Prabhupada was, what his mentality was, what his consciousness was. But, even though he was absorbed in spiritual life, what was his activity? You know, at least four hours a day, he was engaged in looking after the body. Yeah? In the morning, he went for a 2-hour walk, about a mile and a half, and he was speaking up to the devotees about how to preach, spiritual life, so many things. Sometimes he wouldn't speak, but he took time to look after the body in that way. He used to come back just in time to sit on the Vyasasana and give class. And then, later on in the morning, after Prasadam, after, you know, he'd done a few things before lunch, another hour, at least, on massage. An hour's massage. Then Prasadam, then the afternoon, maybe a nap, I don't know. Then the evening came, preaching. And then when he got back from preaching, well, another hour's massage. So it's at least 4 hours a day spent on his body. And so this is a, you know, and Prabhupada, he was once, when he was very sick, one devotee, I think he was at Bhaktivedanta Manor actually, the devotees were carrying him on palanquin up the stairs, and one devotee, he got an abscess on his leg. You know, you imagine Prabhupada's condition. He's about to leave his body any time. So he's very, very ill. And this devotee, he hits his leg against the, you know, the banister. And, ooh, you know, it's really a very severe pain. And Prabhupada says, oh, what's the matter? He says, nothing, Prabhupada. He says, and he told him how to actually look after his leg, what to do with it. So the body's important. And, you know, we may think that, it's all right. And because when you're fit, you tend to forget about, looking after the body. Is that right? When you get sick, then you think, I better look after the body. But I've noticed in due course of time, time tells. If we don't put the time we need into looking after it, then at some point the body will react. I've seen it so many times. You know, it's like anything else. You need to have sufficient foodstuffs. You need to have sufficient sleep, sufficient rest. You know, the body's a machine. And it's designed in such a way that when it gets these things, it remains strong. Because in devotional service, we have to have a strong body. I became sick in Russia. This devotee asked me to go to one part, and I was already going to another. I thought, it's too much. I can't. And then I said, okay, I'll go. And I went. And when I got off the plane, I felt as if I was stood here and my body was over there somewhere. You know, I completely disorientated. And it remained like that for about a month. I wasn't getting the meals at the right time. And, it was all disjointed. And I just felt, weaker and weaker. And then I got severe pains in my stomach. And then I carried on and I went to another part of Russia. And then at one point it was so bad, this doctor says, she sent me to the hospital. And they put this thing down your throat, you know. They're not very, in Russia it's not like here where they gently put it down, you know. And then they feed it. And he pulled it out, he says, 3 ulcers. That was just like, you build up to that, but that last month, that's when it all happened. And then it took me 3 years before I got rid of it. And it was like that, it was a very difficult situation. And I realized that it's my fault. I keep hearing about it, but I carry on. But we can't do that. So we have to look after this. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's not Maya to look after the body. It's devotional service. So we should give it time. You know, eating, sleeping, working, recreation. It has to be balanced. You know, you have to have a balanced meal. A balanced meal means a balanced person. Yeah, you get a bit of bitter, a bit of sweet, a bit of this. Otherwise the body becomes sick. An imbalanced sadhana, the body becomes sick. story of Puranjan. You know Puranjan? He was Prachinabarishat. And he was a little proud king. So Narada Muni was thinking, how can I preach to him? If I preach to him directly, you know, he won't take it so easily. And so he started talking about this fictitious person called Puranjan, one who lives in the body. And he gives all these examples, you know, when the queen went here, he went there, and when he did that. And eventually came to... and then later in life, Puranjan became... The serpent of Puranjan's body became very weak. And he describes that the serpent in the body is like the life force. And it says, and when the body became weak, then that's when all the aggressors were waiting for that moment. He says, you know, what do they call him? Kalakanya. Kalakanya and his soldiers, they all said, you know, he blew the trumpet and they all attacked him. They thought, we've got him. We've got him now. And, you know, they just attacked the body. The serpent was too weak to do anything about it. So, and I was thinking, that's what happens. So, you know, it's not like the natural condition of life is to be fit. The natural condition of this material world is actually to decay. And we have to work to keep afloat in devotional service, to keep afloat with this body. And I realize that disease is just waiting to take advantage of the situation. And we should realize that. It's not the other way around. Anyway, we can stop there. It's 9:30. I think we've made a point about, you know, to understand Krishna, we have to hear about him. And when we hear about him regularly, then we see Krishna. And he appears before us by that service. And then, you know, the soul is of the same nature as Krishna, spiritual. And so, you know, we have to try to work on that platform. And we gave three different ways we can understand or begin to understand that we're not the body, and how to, you know, develop that consciousness of being a soul surrendered to Krishna in devotional service. And simultaneously, we're in this world, but we're not of the world. While we're in the world, we have to look after whatever we have. But we should understand by higher intelligence that we're not of this world. Okay.